host, Dmitry Filipovich.
Welcome to the Hockeypedia Cast. My name is Dmitry Filipovich, and joining me is my good buddy Thomas Jans. Tom, what's going on, fella?
Not much, man. Just had a fall on a hike. I'm icing my ankle at the moment. Rolled it a little bit. I'll be fine. We'll play hurt. It's that time of year. You know, everyone's hurt at this time of year, right?
Certainly. Luckily, we've got some days off in between games here, so you can rest up and be ready for game one. You're day-to-day right now, though. I think people are checking your practice reports, seeing if you're on there, seeing what's going on. But I think it'll be okay. We're taking good care of you.
Yeah, definitely. I'm always day-to-day, so this is no departure.
So we're coming to you from sunny Palm Springs here. We're recording early morning on Thursday. The birds are chirping outside. Life is good. We're having fun here. We're going to keep the good times going. So last time you and I chatted, we did part one of our Stanley Cup final preview. Mm-hmm. We sort of catered it around, I think, something that people who listen to PDO guests have come to appreciate. It's like the random little details and kind of like part-time players or role players that could play an outsized role in the series. So we kind of highlighted them as X factors. Today, we're going to get to like the meat of it. We're going to do all the good stuff. We're going to do the big head-to-head power-on-power matchups, everything you need to know to get you ready for Saturday's game. So let's just get into it. We got 50 minutes here. Let's make the most of it. What's the first big matchup here that you've got your eyes on? And I think it's a very obvious one, but as the guest here, you know, I'm giving you the floor to...
Well, I think actually the marquee matchup is probably not the one that most people will be talking about, which I think is McDavid-Barkov 5-on-5. I think that's the obvious one you're alluding to. But given my hipster nature, I actually think the real marquee matchup is Oilers PP1, right? So we're talking McDavid, we're talking Dreisaitl, we're talking Bouchard, we're talking Hyman, we're talking Ryan Nugent-Hopkins, yes, as a five-man unit.
Yep.
Head-to-head against a first-over-the-boards Panthers PK unit that features Barkov and Reinhart,
mm-hmm,
the two forwards who finished first and second in first place votes among Selke voters.
Okay.
With Gus Forsling and Aaron Ekblad, that matchup is as wild as it gets. It quite literally could pit the best offense or the best NHL power play we've ever seen, ever. Like, historically good power play against the best defensive center, the best defensive forward, and two bona fide top pair guys. One of whom, Gustav Forsling, I think has cemented himself as one of the premier two-way players in this league over the course of the past couple months. Although, really, he's been doing it for a little longer. I mean, what's better than that? Like, that is, as a strength-on-strength matchup, these are the two best, in my view, in their various phases of the game. I'm sure Oilers fans will be messaging into the Discord being like, but our PK rate's higher in the playoffs. But it's like, okay, but think about their personnel. These are the two best in the league going head-to-head with nothing less than the Stanley Cup final or the Stanley Cup itself on the line. I can't wait. Like, I cannot wait to watch what that matchup looks like.
Especially on the heels of what we saw in the two respective conference finals, yes, where on the West side, the Oilers really broke through in games 5 and 6, scored 4 power play goals between the two to put that series away. Whereas in the East, a Rangers power play that I believe was top 3 this season, mm-hmm, as well in efficiency, got absolutely dismantled by, yeah, the Panthers PK, to the point where Ray Ferraro was talking on the broadcast about how sort of like discombobulated they were. Guys were in very uncharacteristic positions because they were just so desperate to try to give them different looks or get guys open. And that pressure up top in particular, you're making the note of how much respect the Rangers were giving to Sasha Barkov atop that umbrella and how they didn't even really want to test him or challenge him.
No.
And that was essentially throwing them completely out of their own rhythm, right? I think the Oilers are going to be much more, I mean, I think they have more versatility with that top unit because McDavid moves around so much that he's going to be able to, if the first or second option isn't working, kind of get himself into better spaces. But I also think they're going to be more sort of determined, I guess, to just like stick with what they do and break through as well, as opposed to like having a couple games of it not going their way and then panicking and trying to like, you know, do stuff at this point of the season that's very out of their norm.
The respect that the Rangers started giving Barkov's harpoon, right? Like, Barkov's one of the best with his stick.
Yeah.
You know, his
ability. It's not an actual stick. It's a weapon.
Yeah. It's not a stick. It's some kind of harpoon or javelin.
Yeah.
But the way that he knifes pucks away from defenders up top and then is, it, I mean, he eats seam passes for breakfast, I'm pretty sure. Like, he's not having Avo Coast in Boca. He's destroying any cross seam pass you attempt. The Oilers, as you mentioned, are a lot less stationary. And I think what I love the most, just as like a hockey appreciator, about the Oilers' power play is the way that their motion game, not the way that it drives McDavid toe drag Heiskanen to his backhand, oh my god, I've never seen a goal like that before, plays, although that's cool. In fact, we want as much of that
yeah,
as we
if
can
that's
get
your thing.
As hockey fans. But the way that their motion keeps everyone skating means it actually drives their retrieval game, right? Because they always have a step,
yep.
Especially once you get 40 seconds into a power play. And it's like, it's such an athletic achievement from this Oilers PP1 group, because the way that they're always moving means that they always have a step on penalty killers. That edge seems to increase the longer the shift runs,
yep.
Right? And then by the end of it, it's just like, the persistence just looks so withering. And that's because it is, but it's also actually like an explicitly driven by their flexibility, by the way that they're constantly in motion. So it's not just about the way that it confuses their opponents. It's also about how that confusion and that stress that they're putting on penalty killers accumulates over the course of time. And then in combination with McDavid and Dreisaitl's like superhuman, honestly, superhuman stamina,
yeah,
just becomes murderous toward the end. The Panthers have their hands full. This is a very different beast.
Well, the best compliment I can give them is just what a disorienting experience it is to watch the Oilers power play, because they can apply like 20 seconds of pressure, and watching it live, you feel like you're like, oh man, these are like the full 2 minutes, and then they've had like three or four chances. The goalie finally stops the puck, and you look up, and it's like 18 seconds have gone off the clock,
right.
And you're like, oh my god, there's that much left on this. And then the second part of it is, they're so, because of the unit they have, they keep those guys out for so long as well, right? I think we've like become accustomed to, you go for about a minute or so, and then if the puck gets cleared, you're going to see PP2 come out and spell the top guys, and then you get a chance to sort of exhale a little bit as the PK unit and get your own guys out there. They're just going to go right back to the attack, and they're comfortable keeping those guys out for the full 2 minutes, right? So you get to a point where if they keep applying that pressure, either your top PK guys are going to be tired because they've just been defending for a minute and a half, or you've got an inferior unit out there because they've changed and now they're attacking against them. And so it just puts you in a big bind. The answer, as always, is take as few penalties as you can. We talked about how the Panthers have been more disciplined compared to last postseason, certainly. And it feels like that's been a point of emphasis for them. But the Oilers are going to get their opportunities. And at that point, you're kind of just hanging on. And I think that's pretty – it's as simple as that, really.
Yeah. It's going to be really interesting to see how much Barkov's just size and Predator natural positioning, genius and the length of his stick is able to just influence things. Like, how much is he actually going to be able to impact this given how much the Oilers just spin you into the ground?
Well, he was doing two things to the Rangers PP that really kind of threw them for a loop, right? One was, he was pressuring Adam Fox so high up that he was almost eliminating him from being one of the players involved. And so it felt like that just threw them out of their rhythm. Mm-hmm. And then part two was, he just lives in that middle of the ice, and he's just hoping that you're going to try that cross seam pass, right?
Right.
That every power play essentially is striving towards. And he's just sitting on it, and he'll intercept it. And what's interesting about the Oilers is they've had a lot of success this postseason with that same side approach, where McDavid is going to skate over with the puck to Dreisaitl, and then they're going to isolate one PKer and kind of do a two-on-one, two-man give-and-go game there. And so maybe that's a way to work around Barkov's presence, because you're like, the passes you're trying to complete are just within closer proximity, and they're not really having to work through his stick. So maybe that can be a bit of a workaround for them. But yeah, I mean, when he's out there, like, it'll be interesting to see how much respect they sort of, and reverence, I guess, they give towards him.
You know those videos that you'll sometimes see on, like, Outdoor Life Network or, like, BBC Richard Attenborough narrated nature documentary, where there's, like, you know, like prey walking across a log being observed by a lizard, and their tongue just like quickly darts out and captures the fly or whatever it is, the frog. That's what Barkov chilling in the lane for a seam pass kind of reminds me of. Mm. And the calmness with which he does it, the fact that, like, you'll occasionally see a player make, like, a great diving chop, you know what I mean, to, like, clear the blue line, and fans go nuts when they see it, as they should. They're unbelievable plays. But it's like Barkov's able to get there without breaking a sweat with possession. And honestly, the way that you know what an attacking player is about to try isn't going to work, and then the calmness with which he breaks it up in combination with the speed of that stick, like, I hesitate to say that it reminds me of Nick Lidstrom, but that's the, like, guy who it most reminds me of, just remembering, you know, watching, like, a forward try to send a pass, and it was just like, nope, no chance. It's just going to be calmly picked off by the guy who's bigger and smarter. Well, Lidstrom wasn't that much bigger, but, like, who's just smarter in terms of their two-way IQ than everyone else on the sheet.
Mm. I think maybe a failing for the Rangers in that East final was that they never really, and listen, like, that top power play unit had so much success all year, and they've had that kind of chemistry of playing together that, I get it, at this point of the season, it reeks of desperation to be, like, making these, like, dramatic changes in that regard. But I would have loved to see Alexis Lafreniere maybe more on that top power play unit, just because I think he was the one player that kind of had success on the man advantage, and it was purely, like, attacking off the rush and trying to, like, sort of skate at the penalty killers and attack them and then get them in compromising positions and go from there. And he had that rush where he, like, put it through Reinhardt's skates and then rang it off the bar. He had a few more sort of silky stick handling plays, and you really can't, you get yourself into trouble if you defer in that way where you're, like, kind of, like, scared of attacking them, and then it kind of forces you out of your spots. The Oilers won't do that, and in particular with McDavid, I think he has, I mean, he's such a unique one-on-one player in that way, but, like, he's so primed to skate, I guess, right at the eye of the storm in that way. And I'm curious to see whether that's able to sort of open up a little more cracks in the Panthers' PK.
Yeah, I do think if there's going to be any hay made, direct hockey is kind of necessary, but that's what the Oilers are kind of the best at on the power play, right? For all that we think of the McDavid moments that bring you out of your seat, like, what kind of makes their power play tick beyond the retrievals is the discipline with which they actually are willing to just, like, take the simple play at the net, just, like, occupy the hard area of the ice. I do think they're pretty well suited to make that adjustment. And just the last thing I'd add is I do think we've seen, too, how adaptable that power play can be. I think you saw in the Vancouver series them start to take more perimeter shots, get more layered traffic in front of Artur Seelovs, in part because I think they figured as that series went on that Seelovs down low with that big frame and that, you know, quality technique and that athleticism was a pretty tough goalie to beat. But if you were able to take his eyes and get accurate shots from the perimeter, you know, his inexperience handling screens at NHL speed and NHL size, you know, could make the difference, and it worked. And then I think we saw in the Stars series them adjust again and, like, attack more below the goal line in a way that's sort of more typical of them. Had great success doing both.
Yeah. No, I think that's going to be that sort of chess match is going to be so fun to watch. I guess let's get into the 5-on-5 component of this as well while we're already talking Barkov and McDavid and sort of a lot of these players are intertwined in that way. And I think that's what's really going to define this series, certainly, especially from a storytelling perspective. Barkov so far this postseason, we've kind of been noting this along the way, but went head-to-head with Kucherov in round one, held him to 2 goals. Round two against Pasternak, won that matchup 2-1, and then kept Zibanejad entirely off the scoreboard at 5-on-5 in round three. And obviously this is just an entirely different challenge, right? And I'm very curious to see how, because I imagine we're going to see a steady dose of that line with Gus Forsling and Ekblad against McDavid whenever Paul Maurice is able to do so. I'm curious to see whether those guys are able to execute a defensive game plan against them that's actually going to be able to provide, like, legitimate roadblocks, right? I think we saw McDavid get frustrated at times and struggle a little bit offensively in round two, and part of it was because JT Miller was very craftily, and I say this with praise, not with as praise. Not, it's like, this is what you should be doing, especially when you're going against that player. Like, he's just so physically superior in so many ways that you almost have to try to, like, craftily cheat to just even the playing field as much as you can in your favor.
It's the Legion of Boom thing. Like, that was the Legion of Boom thing. Commit pass interference on every play and they can't call it all.
Yeah.
Like that. There. And by the way, no one would be like, well, the Legion of Boom shouldn't have been doing that. It's like, no, the Legion of Boom should be. What JT Miller did against McDavid was a template. And I think one that the Panthers would do well to note, and I bet you have.
I bet you they have, and they certainly generally play that way. I will say maybe it's ironic that he's their captain, because the one player that I wouldn't describe that way is Alexander Barkov, right, who is probably the most like gentlemanly player in a very cool way, certainly, yeah, right? But like he will, like he's just like legally going to try to remove you from the puck, and he's like, he takes great pride in that, certainly, and you can see that in the way he operates on the ice. I think you might need to go a bit above and beyond that in this matchup to sort of actually limit McDavid. And so I'm curious to see whether he actually embraces that and kind of makes a bit of a heel turn, or whether just he keeps being just like the most like noble player on the planet.
Yeah, there have been concerns about Barkov being like too nice, yeah, despite being the perfect human. Like real concerns throughout his career, right? And I think this is almost the final exam. This is the test you're sitting. I still come back to the idea that I think Sam Bennett might be a better option to match up with McDavid, simply because I think if you want, you know, if you want McDavid to be wearing a backpack, a red backpack all around the ice every time he steps on, if you want McDavid to be, you know, the boat pulling a water skier through the neutral zone just about every time he goes through it without the puck, I do think Sam Bennett's overall irascibility is maybe a better fit for that. But look, I mean, I do think there's a opposite side of this. When the Canucks had their most success against McDavid in that series, especially like game one, game five in particular, a big part of it was the amount of time that they were able to spend when McDavid was on the ice, forcing him to, and it's not like the Canucks were generating great chances off of this, but they, you know, between Besser and Miller, they had a pair of guys who are, you know, 200 plus pounds and 6 foot two, and they were able to just protect the puck down low and force McDavid to work and spend energy there. And I mean, Barkov's perfectly suited to do that. Perfectly suited to do that. So it's sort of one of those, what matters to you more? The game within a game aspect of sicking Bennett on McDavid, and then having probably a more favorable size matchup in Dreisaitl versus Barkov head to head, or do you just trust that Barkov, your best chance of actually playing McDavid to a draw is to make him try and take the puck from Sasha Barkov, which good luck, even to the best hockey playing human on the planet at that, so that at least you're not in your zone as frequently, even if McDavid has an easier chance getting there when he does finally get the puck.
Yeah, and we saw that against the Rangers. I mean, he was protecting the puck so well along the boards, where like he would just essentially just bully ball it, and Mika Zibanejad was like hanging on for dear life and unable to get it from him. He drew, yep, a number of penalties doing so. So that might certainly be the way to go. I guess the issue for me in sort of that matchup game is I actually think that Barkov gives you your best chance of sort of playing it to a draw, because we've seen like proof of concept. Like, yeah, you're just like, it's very hard to envision a scenario where he just gets blown off the ice from a scoring perspective, because all year now, whenever he's on the ice, just goals like are not happening. And, mm-hmm, that's why he deservedly won the Selke Trophy. So I think he gives you the best chance of doing so. And then I actually do think, as we sort of pivot here slowly to another matchup, I imagine we're just going to see a lot of that Tkachuk line against Dreisaitl. And I actually do think Matthew Tkachuk and Bennett and Evan Rodriguez now playing with them gives you a good chance of scoring more 5-on-5 in that matchup. So from a Panthers perspective, whereas the inverse, I feel like Bennett would be more likely to get blown out of the water, yeah, by McDavid if everything kind of went south. Whereas I'm not sure what Barkov or Dreisaitl would look from like a 5-on-5 goal differential perspective.
Yeah. And you do have to take care at the top of your lineup first. I mean, I really do think that, and I think the Oilers have reminded us of that. We're so used to saying stuff like depth wins in the playoffs, and not to besmirch the contributions of Oilers depth players, but I do think the Oilers have provided a reminder that if you can win consistently at the top of your lineup, an awful lot does trickle down downhill in terms of the impact of that. And so, yeah, I mean, one thing about Barkov, by the way, you were talking about him on the wall, and I do recommend to your listeners that they try and watch this closely, but there's, you remember how people used to say the thing about Patrice Bergeron is positionally he almost never ventures,
yep,
from outside the hash marks?
Mm-hmm.
watch Barkov on the wall and you're going to see something subtle and similar, which is that he is literally never, not once in his life, ever on the wrong side of the puck. The discipline with which his body, even in just like subtle battle positions, is always between the Panthers' goal and his opponent, even as he's, you know, taking these odd angles and using his range to be super disruptive and, you know, winning a 50-50 puck battle that was probably tilted against him like 30-70. His body never, never stops being between the puck and the Panthers' net. It is such an insane level of discipline. I struggle to like fathom it.
There was such a funny penalty in that series where I believe it was Ryan Lindgren. They wound up being called for a holding penalty kind of in that situation along the boards.
Right.
And it must have been depressing for him, because I think at no point in that sequence did anyone believe that, regardless of how many infractions he committed, he was ever going to get the puck from Barkov. And like at one point he was just sort of like leaning along on the boards and like holding him, and he had his stick in his waist essentially, and Barkov was like, I'll just wait you out here, like I'm not in a rush, we can do this dance. And then eventually the refs were like, all right, we need to call something, like this has been going on for too long. And then he still had the puck after that.
I used to think in my head when watching Barkov that this was like if someone had put Datsyuk's hands in David Backus's body or something. I don't think that's quite what it is. There's something quieter about the way that Barkov goes about getting it all done than there ever was for Datsyuk or Backus, who were, you know, two of the best defensive centers of their time, and in Datsyuk's case, probably in anybody's time, right? There's something quieter, something calmer about how Barkov accomplishes this level of two-way dominance. It's just so fun to watch.
Do you have any good Barkov stories?
Always.
From when you guys crossed paths?
Yeah, he's just the nicest guy. I don't know.
I was joking with you that if the Panthers win this series and he gets the Conn Smythe, he's gonna lift it up and he's gonna like celebrate, and then he's gonna like give it to like some sick kid or something and be like, you know what, like you deserve this more, and then he'll just go on with his day and try to win another one.
Oh, you know what? I do have one. Barkov's also like so dialed in terms of the work ethic. All these stars are.
Of course.
You don't get to that level without being. But Barkov, like preternaturally so, works himself to exhaustion, like workouts. I think seeing Jágr for a year kind of, or 2 years on his line toward the end of his career really cemented for him the way that he had to and wanted to work. And that's carried over. And when I was working with him in Florida, the thing about Barkov was he always skates. Like he always skates. So game day, he skates. You know, their optional practices are not optional for Sasha. And like, he's just going to take them. So when I was there, Bob Bugner started designing what he would call mandatory off ice, which is literally just not a morning skate. But it was like, no one could.
Yeah.
No one could, because if you gave Barkov a sliver of room.
Yeah, he ruined it for everyone.
He'd step on the ice. Yeah. So it was literally like they became these reverse optionals, right? It was like, no, it's mandatory that no one skates, because I cannot give Barkov any quarter on this.
I love that.
Or he will expend energy in the morning. He's just so competitive that I've never heard of the word mandatory off ice ever again. I probably never will, but it was literally necessitated by Barkov's just insane workout.
Well, he rules so hard, and he deserves all the success. What I love about this is, by definition, there's only one puck out there. And so if we are getting a lot of Barkov versus McDavid, it's like something has to give, right? Because like on the one hand, I guess they could just play each other to a draw. Mm-hmm. But both guys are entering this series this postseason with like 5-on-5 shares in the 60s across the boards from shots, high danger chances, expected goals certainly. And so you get into the spot where it's like, how does that, if those two just forces just run headfirst into each other, does one of them somehow still keep that up and the other one winds up losing out in that? Or do they just like essentially split the difference and wind up evening it out? I think like that's going to be very fascinating to see.
Yeah, and I think it's going to be closer to splitting the difference probably than one guy dominating. Yeah. But man, just watching it happen, because it'll probably be splitting the difference with both teams having an opportunity here or there to influence outcomes. And it's like, who wins in the 4 or 5 moments that actually decide this series? That's going to determine it.
Well, I think an interesting wrinkle to this is beyond the forwards, and they're going to get a lot of the attention, is the defense partners that are out there with them pretty routinely. We're going to get into that when we come back from break. Let's take our break here, and then when we come back, we'll jump right back in and keep chatting with Tom about all this stuff. You're listening to the Hockey PDOcast streaming on the Sportsnet Radio Network. All right, we're back here in the Hockey PDOcast with Thomas Drance. We are doing our Stanley Cup Final preview here. Before we went to break, we were talking about Barkov versus McDavid, and I sort of teased how I'm interested in the defenseman that'll mostly be on the ice with them, right? And so, on the one hand, from the Panthers' side, you're going to see a healthy dose of Forsling and Ekblad, and I'm very curious to see how Forsling versus McDavid goes as well, right? Because so far this postseason, Forsling has had so much success with his mobility and his ability to essentially just be everywhere at all times, using that range, using that stick to sort of defend one-on-one. Against McDavid's speed, part of that gets neutralized, and so I'm curious to see whether he's able to attack him directly as well and how that works. And maybe the answer to all of this is you essentially go with the two-man defensive approach where you've got Barkov back-checking from one side and Forsling from the front, and you try to sort of clamp him down and corral him that way as opposed to just leaving anyone, either of these guys, on an island one-on-one, because they probably will lose that from a speed perspective.
I think you have to do that, especially through the neutral zone, because there's no way there's just no way to stay with him. Like, no one can do it. It is what it is. Especially because it's not just the speed he's moving at, it's what he can do at that speed and like the subtleties of how he attacks you while you're also fearing for your life as, oh, just one of the top 50 skaters on the planet anyway. It's unbelievable stuff, right? And so, you know, there's a lot to unpack here, but I do think the like static dynamism part of this is essential too, which is that there's a defensive deterrent that McDavid brings with that rush speed, with his ability to attack against the grain, that also impacts how defenders, how forwards think about creating chances, right? You're worried about missing a shot, you know, a far side low, for example, because it's going to roll up the boards, and if it gets outside the blue, guess who's probably beating your defenseman to a race. A giveaway that allows the Oilers to jailbreak off the rush is worst case scenario, and that's a concern, something you're dealing with in the offensive zone, which I think is why, again, like, as much as they'll have to corral or build, you know, effectively a two-sided wall, try and keep McDavid locked into a glass box of emotion as much as is humanly possible, I still think the key here is to find the right setting on the dial. It's not max, it's not min, it's probably not medium. It's somewhere cranked a little bit more toward max, but just finding that like right setting on the dial where the Panthers are attacking enough to generate that zone time that they're going to need to actually limit McDavid, you know, and realistically limit McDavid, quote unquote. If he has five games where he doesn't personally break your back, it's like, that's amazing.
Yeah.
Right? If he has just two dominant games and one great game, you're coming out of that series totally happy. But I think the key to achieving that, honestly, is you've got to find a way to not get outshot by 25-30 in, you know, the 100-plus five-on-five minutes that McDavid's going to spend against you five-on-five in the series. Mm.
Well, I think a common theme we keep coming back to in the postseason is sort of, it's this game of chicken between two teams in terms of whose best game or whatever they're doing is able to force the opposition into changing fundamentally like their tactics and sort of their approach to this stuff. And that's sort of what you're referring to with the threat of that rush speed and then that potentially making you less aggressive around the offensive zone blue line. And that ties in perfectly here because I think part of why Forsling has been so successful, and like I'm going to put a big Eastern Conference Final mixtape on YouTube. There was one from the first round. He picks you up so early. Like most defenders in today's game are so afraid of that speed coming at them that they'll sag back and give you that space to skate and then kind of try to preserve around their own net. Forsling's going to pick him up like at the offensive zone blue line and try to sort of knock the puck away or at least disrupt his rush a little bit. And if he gets burned a couple times by that, maybe he changes the way he plays, and then all of a sudden it becomes a different dynamic. But that'll certainly be interesting to watch. I just can't wait to see that head-to-head. I thought our pal Jack Hahn had a really interesting note in his preview on his Substack about how the Panthers in their own zone, because of their coverage scheme, like the strong side defender generally chases up to the point, which is different than a lot of teams now where you're like preaching, like staying around your own net essentially, right? And I think we see like a guy like Forsling chases whoever has the puck and is able to knock the puck away and get it out of the zone or potentially create a rush opportunity for Florida. He's going to be trying to do that. The issue is that McDavid can really embrace this cat and mouse game of like trying to draw him away from the net and then being the one player on the planet, maybe other than maybe McKinnon, who can then pivot and cut back and beat him back to the net after he just dragged him away from it. And whether I think Forsling's like able to resist potentially falling into that trap, or if he just has the support behind him from Barkov or Reinhardt or whoever else to kind of cover that space, that's going to be something to watch. I think we're going to see that sort of isolated one-on-one head-to-head. And listen, like as much as I love Forsling, I also love Miro Heiskanen, and he got burned a number of times by McDavid in similar circumstances. So it's going to happen regardless. Like, I think, do you agree with this, that the best offense is always going to beat the best defense, just because if you're a guy like McDavid, you're just, that if he executes, you can like do the best things positionally to try to bother him, but he will get to his spot regardless.
He's too physically powerful and too skillful and nuanced at manipulating everything that you're damned if you do, damned if you don't. You know what I mean? Like, if you overcommit to do this thing, he's going to do the other thing, and people, and you're going to look silly. If you play it conservatively, people will say he had too much time and space. You know, like frankly, you're screwed before you've even stepped into the matchup. And so you're just trying to limit how often and how loud those moments are. I think Forsling can have success there. And I do think there's some elements too, where, you know, this part, like if you're forcing, because it's not always going to be McDavid on that curl effectively, right? Like if you're forcing an Oilers forward who's not McDavid or Dreisaitl up high, and then it's like, can they form a quick interchange with CC or Nurse, or Brett Kulak playing his offside, or Philip Broberg, who's never been in this situation? Are there opportunities for the Panthers to get going off the rush? And this to me comes back to, you said, will this team's best thing be, you know, which team's best thing is better than the best thing the other team does? And I'm pretty confident that the best thing that either team does in this series is the Panthers' pressure. Like, I think the Panthers' pressure is, just from a team and systems level, like the most imposing aspect of the series, even more so than Edmonton's like domineering skill. I just think the Panthers' ability to play with incredible pace and put pressure on puck carriers and expose decision-making and physical limitations just as a result of how overwhelming it can be for their opponents. Like, I do think that that's the best thing either team does. And I think you're going to see it manifest both in the defensive zone, but like obviously on the forecheck, which we've talked about a ton, like, you know, for the Panthers, there's not a trigger point that they do on one part of the ice. It's like a lifestyle. It's a way of life. And I think the Oilers' ability to answer that is ultimately going to, like, how much can they solve the problem of just the pressure game that the Panthers are able to bring everywhere?
I just can't stress enough how outlandishly good Forsling has been this postseason. I think, like, I'm glad that, like, on the ESPN broadcast, I feel like Ray Ferraro has been, to his credit, acknowledging it at all times. But just the fact that, like, how frustrating it must be for a player, a skilled player, to turn around and be like, all right, I got a second here to make a play, and he's just always there. Mm-hmm. Like, he is such, like, his stick and his range are that, but his skating ability as well, he covers so much ground. It worked really well so far because he got to, while they're just otherworldly skill players in Kucherov, Pasternak, and even Panarin, they're more stationary in terms of their approach from that, right? Like, Kucherov in the first round is, like, hanging around the wall, and he wants the puck to rim to him, and then he'll make a play off of it. Pasternak's moving more, but, like, he's not beating you directly one-on-one with speed. Same with Panarin, more, like, shiftiness and kind of trickery.
Yeah.
McDavid's just going to go head-on against him, right? And I think that's, like, an entirely different sort of matchup, right? Because it's a skill player, certainly, but he's just trying to beat you in a way different way. So how he sort of I think there's probably going to be like a bit of a recalibration period at the start of the series because you just haven't faced anything like this yet. But yeah, I'm so excited to watch that.
That's now a theme though, right? Like you think in general, do you think in general that the more direct the Oilers play, the more successful they'll be unlocking what the Panthers do?
Yeah, and I think it applies to the breakout as well. Like I kept saying this in the Rangers series, I wish their defensemen would just more directly try to skate the puck out. You might occasionally turn it over and it leads to a chance or a goal against, but at least it gives you like a path forward for breaking out of the zone and then creating off the rush. Instead, they just kept deferring to just kind of like pushing the puck up the wall, turning it over, and just doing it all over again.
Yeah.
And that's going to be the same thing here, and that applies in all areas of the ice for the Oilers. Like, I think if you fall into the trap of hearing the footsteps and kind of being overly cautious about it, that's almost going to create even further problems for you. You might wind up running into trouble by going directly at it, but I think it gives you a chance of coming out on the other side, whereas the alternative, I think we know what it looks like.
Yeah.
And it's just, you know, shot attempts being like 75 to 28 halfway through the third period, and you just spending the entire game in your own zone. And the Oilers cannot play that way. Like, the issues they bump into defensively is when they have to spend extended time in their own zone, and all of a sudden there's breakdowns in coverage. They need to be the aggressors attacking in the offensive zone. And the Panthers, I'm sure, are cognizant of that and will do everything in their power to prevent it from happening.
I'm curious to get your take on Leon Draisaitl.
Did you just go into host mode there? No, it's not like a gear switch, and you're like,
well, I was just thinking. I was like, we've gotten 40 or 35 minutes into this podcast without like really spending time on Draisaitl, and I feel like we got to amend that. So
we talked about him on the power play a little bit, certainly, but yeah,
in terms
of directly like carrying the burden, yeah.
Well, and just, you know, at 5-on-5, I mean, I think his lines been only good in this playoffs, right? Like, McDavid's been driving the edge. He's had the sharp end of the stick of the Oilers' attack, and people will say, yeah, well, he's Connor McDavid. Nice observation, dummy. But, you know, we've seen other playoffs where it was Draisaitl, right? Yeah. Like, we've seen other runs where Draisaitl is scoring at margin, or Draisaitl's line is scoring at margin against their opponents, and that, I mean, I think it's 18 goals for, 15 goals against. It's off the top of my head. But, you know, not a huge differential being racked up with Draisaitl on the ice. Is this a tough matchup for him, given the Oilers' pressure game? Or, sorry, given the Panthers' pressure game?
Yeah. The note on the goal differential there is, like, with all these Oilers' wowies, we just have to note that, like, McDavid is just playing with Bouchard.
Yes.
Like, 80% of the time.
Right.
And then when Bouchard doesn't play with McDavid, in those rare instances, it's with Draisaitl, and they look really good in those minutes.
Yeah.
But the issue for Draisaitl is in like the other whatever 60% of his 5-on-5 minutes, it's with like Darnell Nurse
for sure.
His pair, right? And so I think that's partly why the goals against are as bad. I don't think it's anything he's done directly.
Oh, I'm not worried about the goals against. It's just overall, he's been positive.
Yes.
But it's like with Draisaitl not playing with this nuke combination of Bouchard, Ekholm, McDavid, and whatever wingers are there at the time, although of late, Ryan Nugent Hopkins and Hyman, right? Like, when the Oilers attack with that five-man unit, that's now, for me, like, the top end and their biggest advantage going into the series, right? If we're talking about the thing that the Oilers do well and might be better than the thing the Panthers do best, it's like that five-man unit is the answer. At the top of the lineup, the Oilers have, you know, a 117-mile-per-hour fastball unlike anything we've ever seen. But it's like Draisaitl's not part of that now. Draisaitl's part of the hold up, the Atlas Act of like holding up just enough so that what that five-man unit does sort of counts. I'm not trying to diminish Draisaitl's importance to this team. But
No. I wasn't suggesting that at all.
No, I know. I just want to, like,
we're both the biggest Leon guys.
Yeah, he's the
in the world. I wonder if the proximity to the Stanley Cup impacts the calculus of like how willing they are to embrace putting Leon on that top line and going nuke more often, as opposed to playing the long game of like trying to spread it out and only using him after penalty kills and stuff like that. Like, I wonder if the fact that they're like, all right, we have a maximum of 7 games left here in the season, and if we win four of them, we have the Stanley Cup and nothing else matters. If you're just willing to like fully, not that they've had the training wheels on or any restraints by any means, but like I do think there's probably a further, especially since by all accounts, like I think both guys are pretty healthy and they've had a week off now between series as well. Like I think everyone's entering the series in about as good a shape as you can hope for this time of year. I wonder if they're just going to go like, because we've seen them at times, it's been a while now, but we've seen like, Leon, you're just playing 28 minutes tonight. And Connor as well. And they did it in the Canucks series when they had to at times, right? And it's not sustainable in the long haul, but the long haul isn't really in question here anymore.
Yeah, and I mean, people will say, though, like they wore down in that series or whatever, but I mean, they're such freaks, frankly, athletically, that I do think, like, if you were ever going to have like a McDavid 27-minute game and it doesn't get to overtime, this is the time.
I do think, like with Dreisaitl, with having that speed on his wings now, whether it's McLeod or Holloway or Fogle, if he draws back in, I do like that much more in this series. Like, I don't think they can get away with him lugging around Perry and Kane and kind of relying on that. Because I think the pace that the Panthers force you into, I think is going to like take those guys into the deep end and give them a lot of trouble. I don't think you can get away with that.
Have you seen the Oilers have been practicing this week with Fogle back up with Dreisaitl?
Yeah, but I believe it's because Kane hasn't been practicing and he probably will play in that. I think Fogle's been more of a placeholder there, unfortunately. Okay. But I think we also did see here in Oblock say, like, whether it's game one or game four or whatever his quote was, like, at some point Fogle will play a role in this series, and I'm sure he will because, though, sooner or later they'll, like, realize, they'll like, we just need guys who can move.
Yeah. Well, and the other thing that's been interesting about it is they've had McLeod and Henrique on different lines. I know this is supposed to be a top-end preview, but I'm just curious. I am. I want to know your
take. Don't worry.
On...
We'll talk Kevin Stenlund after this as well. Just to...
I mean, you know my feelings about Kevin Stenlund.
Can you vouch for how upset I was at the time of the Seattle expansion draft when they took Gavin Bayreuther instead of Kevin Stenlund? I don't think I like really publicly talked about it because I'm like, I don't know. This just isn't worth, like, this battle isn't worth fighting. But, like, meanwhile, you and I were, like, going to the dog park with our dogs, and I was like, why did they do that? Kevin Stenlund's good.
I had no idea. Anyway, good for him, man. He's going to smell like the vault in 3 weeks regardless, but might smell like the vault and have a Stanley Cup ring, which would be a pretty nice season for a guy who's taken a while to carve out a niche in the league. If the Oilers do attack the Panthers, because we've talked a little bit about the depth matchup, and I don't want to get away from the top end too much, but I need to know, and we haven't talked about this yet. If the Oilers do approach this where, like, they're trying to fatten their bottom six, not even have a top nine, but kind of have two-third, quote-unquote, lines, does that play into the Panthers' hands, given what we saw from Florida's fourth line? Or is that Edmonton going after... is Edmonton chasing the Adam Henrique can be our Barkley Gaudreau glow up with that move?
Yeah, I mean, I think they probably could get away with it in a series because, as we talked about, a lot of pressure is going to be on Lundell Lucarinen to create offensively.
Yeah.
And if they don't, like, I don't think while this is a bottom six that can control territorially and sort of play the way the Panthers like to sort of just like keep the line moving. It's also not one that's going to strike, you know, fear into you in terms of like, all right, we're going to get buried here from a goal perspective. Like, so I think they can get away with it from that. Let's not move away too far from this because I want to talk more about Dreisaitl and Tkachuk in particular because I think we're going to see that sort of head-to-head between those two if the top lines go against each other. Man, Tkachuk against the Rangers just dominated territorially. Like, his shot attempts at times were like 70% range or so. Mm-hmm. And so I'm very curious to see whether that can keep up in this series, whether they can create more goals off of it, whether he's able to get the puck behind the net and sort of work there. One of our listeners made a really good note about how, in response to our X Factor show, about how the Oilers struggle at times when you switch sides in the offensive zone, work the puck behind the net, and then force their defenders to move around because all of a sudden their situational awareness kind of exposes that. So I think that line kind of actually gives Florida the best chance of creating sustainable offense here, even with Carter Verhaeghe not on it, like if it is Tkachuk with Bennett and Rodriguez. So yeah, I think they're going to have opportunities here to create, and it's going to be a really interesting thing to see, especially against Dreisaitl defensively.
Yeah, that if it's Tkachuk line versus Draisaitl, that's just going to be a ton of fun to watch, especially given the history between those two players, the Battle of Alberta of it all. Will be very easy for Calgary writers to localize those stories.
Well, not only redemption for Tkachuk in that angle, but also he was so hurt at the end of last year's Stanley Cup final as well, and wasn't really able to contribute, and obviously didn't wind up playing at the end. So I think, like, assume, like I said, health for everyone. Like, it seems like he's in much better shape this time and has a chance to, like, actually see this thing through. So, yeah. Okay. Any other notes here? Because I think we've kind of, like, we started off with really just one topic, but we actually did a really good job here, I think, of organically kind of covering a lot of ground. Any other notes on any of this stuff that you think is interesting?
I don't think so. I mean, we could get into, like, Ekblad, Ryan Nugent, Hopkins, and some of those guys. But
well, I think okay, let's do Hyman.
Okay.
Because we haven't really spoken about him yet in this.
Did you see? So his Conn Smythe odds are, like, plus
3,300.
Okay, plus 3,300. Yeah. And he's 4 goals away from setting the record for most playoff goals ever.
Yep, he's got 14 so far.
I mean, he goes nuke in 2 big games here. I know that, like, hockey voters are smart enough to give responsibility primarily to McDavid, and I think that's right. But
well, we just saw Jonathan Marchessault win the Conn Smythe.
Right. And, yeah.
I think anyone that watched that playoff run in particular was like, all right, the goals are obviously huge, but they don't happen if Eichel's not creating, if William Karlsson isn't winning his 5-on-5 minutes, if Mark Stone's not the best player in the Stanley Cup final isolated. Like, on my list, I had him, like, 4th, and it wasn't to take away from his performance because he scored a bunch of huge goals along the way, and we talk about, like, having shots and chances is good, but if you're not actually converting on them, you're going to be going home, and so that matters. But I think that's the argument here, where there might be better players who are fundamentally more important, but if Hyman scores 5 or 6 goals in this series, sets the record for postseason scoring, and also winds up, like, what does he have, like, 68 or so, like, regular season and playoff goals combined now? Like, he's going to get into the 70s as well, which is just, no one really talks about, like, combined goal stats for a season, but I do think
unbelievable.
The totality of the work here is, like, is immense.
It's immense.
And so he's also going to get a lot of, like, he's going to live around the net, right? And the Panthers don't really spend much time defending down low because they never have to. And so if the Oilers are able to impose their will in that way, I think he's going to give Ekblad a lot of trouble. He might draw a couple penalties on him there.
Yeah.
He's going to get a lot of rebound opportunities, and he's going to have to lift them against Bobrovsky. But, like, I think, like, what he does on the back end of all of McDavid's creation there could really swing this series as well. Not that that's groundbreaking, but, like, he has an opportunity here to make an outsized impact from a goal-scoring perspective.
Yeah, I mean, the fact that he's on the... He has a very realistic path at this point, given his deployment to being the highest scorer in a Stanley Cup playoff run ever, is mind-blowing given the conversation that has existed around Zach Hyman for the last 8 years, right? I mean, what an arc. And I'd add this, like, Bobrovsky's chaos down low feels like there's something there that I think the Oilers can, especially if they're making life, Hyman in particular, is able to make life hard for Bobrovsky. It feels like there's going to be ways or space for them to get him overcommitted, you know, or stressed out with some down low passing or traffic. And I'm really curious to see that interplay there, especially because I don't see the Panthers as having the sort of size on the back end to really prevent him from getting a lot of what he wants.
Well, I thought like Kreider and Zibanejad would have a bit of success in the East Final heading into it, because I was like, oh, Kreider down low, I think he can give the defense some trouble, win some battles there. And then the Rangers were just never able to get the puck down there.
Yeah.
And so if the Oilers are actually able to break through those first couple roadblocks, then that comes into play. But yeah, I mean, I love, like, it's probably a loser's bet and probably speaks to my mentality of, like, always looking for value with this stuff, whether it's a fantasy football draft or whether it's the Conn Smythe market. But I'm like, all right, I see your McDavid and Barkov, and I'll raise you Hyman at plus 3,300 and Forsling at plus 6,600. Give me those two tickets instead, and I'll have my boy there. Okay. Are we out of time here?
Yes.
Okay. Plug some stuff.
Canucks Talk on Sportsnet 650 or wherever you find your podcasts. The Athletic coverage of the Canucks and other stuff available all the time. Check me out there. And I'll be here all week.
We're going to be here the and even next week.
Yeah,
we're
going to
be doing a lot more shows together. Get in the Discord. We're going to get Tom in there. We need to, like, we've got some listeners being like, you know what? Why isn't Drance in here commenting? Because it's ablaze with comments on you and on our vacation here in Palm Springs.
I actually don't want to sound too much like a boomer, but I'm having trouble seeing posts in that channel. So I'll just hand you my phone and get you to sort it out for me.
All right, we'll get you responding to stuff in there. If you're not in there as a listener, please, the invite link is in the show notes. Pop in. And that's all for today. We'll be back with plenty more. So until then, thank you for listening to the Hockey PDOcast streaming on the Sportsnet Radio Network.